The next day dawned bright and clear and cold. The sky became a blue dome stuck on the white sheet of the world, and the whole effect would have been as fresh and clean as a toothpaste advert if it wasn't for the pink dot on the horizon.
"You can see it in daylight now," said Cohen. "What is it?"
He looked hard at Rincewind, who reddened. "Why does everybody look at me?" he said. "I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a comet or something."
"Will we all be burned up?" said Bethan.
"How should I know? I've never been hit by a comet before." They were riding in single file across the brilliant snowfield. The horse people, who seemed to hold Cohen in high regard, had given them their mounts and directions to the River Smarl, 100 miles rimward, where Cohen reckoned Rincewind and Twoflower could find a boat to take them to the Circle Sea. He had announced that he was coming with them, on account of his chilblains. Bethan had promptly announced that she was going to come too, in case Cohen wanted anything rubbed. Rincewind was vaguely aware of some sort of chemistry bubbling away. For one thing, Cohen had made an effort to comb his beard.
"I think she's rather taken with you," he said.
Cohen sighed.
"If I was 20 years younger," he said wistfully.
"Yes?"
"I'd be 67.
"What's that got to do with it?"
"Well, how can I put it? When I was a young man, carving my name in the world, well, then I liked my women red-haired and fiery."
"Ah."
"And then I grew a little older, and for preference I looked for a woman with blonde hair and the glint of the world in her eye."
"Oh, yes."
"But then I grew a little older again, and I came to see the point of dark women of a sultry nature."
He paused. Rincewind waited.
"And," he said,
"then what? What is it that you look for in a woman now?" Cohen turned one rheumy blue eye on him.
"Patience," he said.
"I can't believe it," said a voice behind them. "Me riding with Cohen the Barbarian." It was Twoflower. Since early morning he had been like a monkey with a key to the banana plantation after discovering he was breathing the same air as the greatest hero of all time.
"Is he perhaps being sarcastic?" said Cohen to Rincewind.
"No, he's always like that."
Cohen turned in his saddle. Twoflower beamed at him and waved proudly. Cohen turned back and grunted.
"He's got eyes, isn't he?"
"Yes, but they don't work like other people's. Take it from me. I mean, well, you know the horse people's yurt where we were last night?"
"Yes."
"Would you say it was a bit dark and greasy and smelt like a very ill horse?"
"Very accurate description, I'd say."
"He wouldn't agree. He'd say it was a magnificent barbarian tent, hung with the pelts of the great beasts hunted by the lean-eyed warriors from the edge of civilization, and smelt of the rare and curious resins plundered from the caravans as they crossed the trackless..." "Well, and so on. I mean it," he added.
"He's mad?"
"Sort of mad, but mad with lots of money."
"Oh, then he can't be mad. I've been around. If a man has lots of money, he's just eccentric."
Cohen turned in his saddle again. Twoflower was telling Bethan how Cohen had single-handedly defeated the snake warriors of the witch lord of Subalinda and stolen the sacred diamond from the giant statue of Ofla, the crocodile god. A weird smile formed among the wrinkles of Cohen's face.
"I could tell him to shut up if you like," said Rincewind.
"Would he?"
"Nah, not really."
"Let him babble," said Cohen.
His hand fell to the handle of his sword, polished smooth by the grip of decades.
"Anyway, I like his eyes," he said. "They can see for 50 years.
100 yards behind them, hopping rather awkwardly through the soft snow, came the luggage. No one ever asked its opinion about anything. By evening, they had come to the edge of the high plains, and rode down through gloomy pine forests that had only been lightly dusted by the snowstorm. It was a landscape of huge cracked rocks, and valleys so narrow and deep that the days only lasted about 20 minutes. A wild, windy country, the sort where you might expect to find...
"Trolls,"
said Cohen, sniffing the air. Rincewind stared around him in the red evening light. Suddenly, rocks that had seemed perfectly normal looked suspiciously alive. Shadows that he wouldn't have looked at twice now began to look horribly occupied.
"I like trolls," said Twoflower.
"No, you don't,"
said Rincewind firmly. You can't. They're big and knobbly, and they eat people.
No, they don't, said Cohen, sliding awkwardly off his horse and massaging his knees. Well-known misapprehension, that is. Trolls never ate anybody.
No?
No, they always spit the bits out. Can't digest people, you see. Your average troll don't want any more out of life than a nice lump of granite, maybe with perhaps a nice slab of limestone for afters. I heard someone say it's because they're
Cohen paused and wiped his beard.
Made out of rocks.
Rincewind nodded. Trolls were not unknown in Ankh-Morpork, of course, where they often got employment as bodyguards. They tended to be a bit expensive to keep, until they learned about doors and didn't simply leave the house by walking aimlessly through the nearest wall. As they gathered firewood, Cohen went on.
Trolls' teeth. That's the things.
Why? Said Bethan.
Diamonds. Got to be, you see. Only thing that can stand the rocks, and they still have to grow a new set every year.
Talking of teeth, said Twoflower.
Yes.
I can't help noticing.
Yes?
Oh, nothing, said Twoflower.
Yes. Oh, let's get this fire going before we lose the light. And then...
Cohen's face fell.
I suppose we'd better make some soup.
Rincewind's good at that, said Twoflower enthusiastically. He knows all about herbs and roots and things. Cohen gave Rincewind a look which suggested that he, Cohen, didn't believe that.
"Well, the horse people gave us some horse jerky," he said. "If you can find some wild onions and stuff, it might make it taste better."
"But Rincewind began and gave up. "Anyway," he reasoned, "I know what an onion looks like. It's a sort of saggy white thing with a green bit sticking out of the top. Should be fairly conspicuous. "I'll just go and have a look, shall I?" he said.
"Yes."
"Over there, in all that thick, shadowy undergrowth."
Very good place, yes.
Where all the deep gullies and things are, you mean?
Ideal spot, I'd say.
Yes, I thought so, said Rincewind bitterly. He set off wondering how you attracted onions. After all, he thought, although you see them hanging in ropes on market stalls, they probably don't grow like that. Perhaps peasants or whatever use onion hounds or something, or sing songs to attract onions. There were a few early stars out as he started to poke aimlessly among the leaves and grass. Luminous fungi, unpleasantly organic, and looking like marital aids for gnomes, squished under his feet. Small flying things bit him. Other things, fortunately invisible, hopped or slithered away under the bushes and croaked reproachfully at him.
"Onions?" whispered Rincewind. "Any onions here?"
"There's a patch of them by that old yew tree," said a voice beside him.
"Ah," said Rincewind, "good." There was a long silence except for the buzzing of mosquitoes around Rincewind's ears. He was standing perfectly still. He hadn't even moved his eyes. Eventually he said,
"Excuse me."
"Yes?"
"Which one's the yew?"
"Small, gnarly one with the little dark green needles."
"Oh, yes, I see. Thanks again."
He didn't move. Eventually the voice said, conversationally,
"Anything more I can do for you?"
"You're not a tree, are you?" said Rincewind, still staring straight ahead.
"Don't be silly. Trees can't talk."
"Sorry, it's just that I've been having a bit of difficulty with trees lately, you know how it is."
"Not really. I'm a rock."
Rincewind's voice hardly changed. "Fine, fine," he said slowly. "Well, I'll just be getting those onions, then."
"Enjoy them."
He walked forward in a careful and dignified fashion, spotted a clump of stringy white things huddling in the undergrowth, uprooted them carefully, and turned round. There was a rock a little way away. But there were rocks everywhere. The very bones of the disc were near the surface here. He looked hard at the yew tree, just in case it had been speaking. But the yew, being a fairly solitary tree, hadn't heard about Rincewind the arboreal saviour, and in any case was asleep.
"If that was you, Twoflower, I knew it was you all along," said Rincewind.
His voice sounded suddenly clear and very alone in the gathering dusk.
Rincewind remembered the only fact he knew for sure about trolls, which was that they turned into stone when exposed to sunlight, so that anyone who employed trolls to work during daylight had to spend a fortune in barrier cream. But now that he came to think about it, it didn't say anywhere what happened to them after the sun had gone down again. The last of the daylight trickled out of the landscape, and there suddenly seemed to be a great many rocks about.
"He's an awful long time with those onions," said Two Flower. "Do you think we'd better go and look for him?"
"We should know how to look after themselves," said Cohen. "Don't worry."
He winced. Bethan was cutting his toenails.
"He's not a terribly good wizard, actually," said Two Flower, drawing nearer the fire. "I wouldn't say this to his face, but," he leaned towards Cohen, "I've never actually seen him do any magic."
"Right, let's have the other one," said Bethan.
"This is very kind of you."
"You'd have quite nice feet if only you'd look after them."
"I can't seem to bend down like I used to," said Cohen sheepishly. "Of course you don't get to meet many chiropodists in my line of work. Funny, really. I've met any amount of snake priests, mad gods, warlords. Never any chiropodists. I suppose it wouldn't look too right, really. Cohen against the chiropodists."
"Or Cohen and the chiropractors of doom," suggested Bethan.
Cohen cackled.
"Or Cohen and the mad dentists," laughed Two Flower.
Cohen's mouth snapped shut.
"What's so funny about that?"
he asked, and his voice had knuckles in it.
Oh, well, said Two Flower, "your teeth, you see."
"What about them?"
snapped Cohen. Two Flower swallowed.
"I can't help noticing that they're, not in the same geographical location as your mouth."
Cohen glared at him. Then he sagged, and looked very small and old.
"True, of course," he muttered. "I don't blame you. It's hard to be a hero with no teeth. It don't matter what else you lose. You can get by with one eye, even. But you show him a mouth full of gums, and no one has any respect."
"I do," said Bethan, loyally.
"Why don't you get some more?" said Two Flower, brightly.
"Yes, well, if I was a shark or something, yes, I'd grow some," said Cohen, sarcastically.
"Oh, no, you buy them," said Two Flower. "Look, I'll show you. Bethan, do you mind looking the other way?"
He waited until she'd turned around, and then he put his hand to his mouth.
"You see?" he said.
Bethan heard Cohen gasp.
"You can take yours out?"
"Oh, yes. I've got several sets. Excuse me."
There was a swallowing noise, and then, in a more normal voice, Two Flower said,
"It's very convenient, of course."
Cohen's very voice radiated awe, or as much awe as is possible without teeth, which is about the same amount as with teeth, but sounds a great deal less impressive.
"I should think so," he said. "When they ache, you just take them out and let them get on with it, yes? Teach the little buggers a lesson. See how they like being left to ache all by themselves."
"That's not quite right," said Two Flower carefully. "They're not mine. They just belong to me."
"You put someone else's teeth in your mouth?"
"No, someone made them. Lots of people wear them where I come from. It's,
But Two Flower's lecture on dental appliances went ungiven because somebody hit him. The disc's little moon toiled across the sky. It shone by its own light, owing to the cramped and rather inefficient astronomical arrangements made by the Creator, and was quite crowded with assorted lunar goddesses, who were not at this particular time paying much attention to what went on in the disc, but were getting up a petition about the ice giants. Had they looked down, they would have seen Rincewind talking urgently to a bunch of rocks. Trolls are one of the oldest life forms in the multiverse, dating from an early attempt to get the whole life thing on the road without all that squashy protoplasm. Individual trolls live for a long time, hibernating during the summertime and sleeping during the day, since heat affects them and makes them slow. They have a fascinating geology. One could talk about tribology, one could mention the semiconductor effects of impure silicon, one could talk about the giant trolls of prehistory who made up most of the disc's major mountain ranges and will cause some real problems if they ever awake. But the plain fact is,
that without the disc's powerful and pervasive magical field, trolls would have died out a long time ago. Psychiatry hadn't been invented on the disc. No one had ever shoved an ink blot under Rincewind's nose to see if he had any loose toys in the attic. So the only way he'd have been able to describe the rocks turning back into trolls was by gabbling vaguely about how pictures suddenly form when you look at the fire, or clouds. One minute there'd be a perfectly ordinary rock, and suddenly a few cracks that had been there all along took on the definite appearance of a mouth, or a pointed ear. A moment later, and without anything actually changing at all, a troll would be sitting there, grinning at him with a mouthful of diamonds.
"They wouldn't be able to digest me," he told himself. "I'd make them awfully ill." It wasn't much of a comfort.
"So, you're Rincewind the Wizard?" said the nearest one.
It sounded like someone running over gravel.
"I dunno. I thought you'd be taller." "Perhaps he's eroded a bit," said another one. "The legend is awfully old."
Rincewind shifted awkwardly. He was pretty certain the rock he was sitting on was changing shape, and a tiny troll, hardly any more than a pebble, was sitting companionably on his foot and watching him with extreme interest.
"Legend," he said. "What legend?"
"It's been handed down from mountain to gravel since the sunset of time," said the first troll.
An interesting metaphor. To nocturnal trolls, of course, the dawn of time lies in the future.
"When the red star lights the sky, Rincewind the Wizard will come looking for onions. Do not bite him. It is very important that you help him stay alive."
There was a pause.
"That's it," said Rincewind.
"Yes," said the troll. "We've always been puzzled about it. Most of our legends are much more exciting. It was more interesting being a rock in the old days."
"It was," said Rincewind weakly.
"Oh, yes, no end of fun. Volcanoes all over the place. It really meant something being a rock then. There was none of this sedimentary nonsense. You were igneous or nothing. Of course, that's all gone now. People call themselves trolls today. Well, sometimes they're hardly more than slate. Chalk, even. I wouldn't give myself airs if you could use me to draw with. Would you?"
"No," said Rincewind quickly. "Absolutely not, no. This, legend thing. It said you shouldn't bite me."
"That's right," said the little troll on his foot. "And it was me who told you where the onions were."
"We're rather glad you came along," said the first troll, which Rincewind couldn't help noticing was the biggest one there.
"We're a bit worried about this new star. What does it mean?"
"I don't know," said Rincewind. "Everyone seems to think I know about it, but I don't."
"It's not that we would mind being melted down," said the big troll. "That's how we all started, anyway. But we thought maybe it might mean the end of everything, and that doesn't seem a very good thing." "It's getting bigger," said another troll. "Look at it now. It's bigger than last night."
Rincewind looked. It was definitely bigger than last night.
"So we thought you might have some suggestions," said the head troll, as meekly as it is possible to sound, with a voice like a granite gargle.
"You could jump over the edge," said Rincewind. "There must be lots of places in the universe that could do with some extra rocks."
"We've heard about that," said the troll. "We've met rocks that tried it. They say you float about for millions of years, and then you get very hot and burn away and end up at the bottom of a big hole in the scenery. That doesn't sound very bright."
It stood up with a noise like coal rattling down a chute, and stretched its thick, knobbly arms.
"Well, we're supposed to help you," it said. "Anything you want doing?"
"I was supposed to be making some soup," said Rincewind.
He waved the onions vaguely. It was probably not the most heroic or purposeful gesture ever made.
"Soup?" said the troll. "Is that all?"
"Well, maybe some biscuits too."
The trolls looked at one another, exposing enough mouth jewellery to buy a medium-sized city. Eventually the biggest troll said,
"Soup it is, then?"
It shrugged grittily.
"It's just that we imagined that the legend would, well, be a little more, I don't know, somehow I thought, still, I expect it doesn't matter."
It extended its hand like a bunch of fossil bananas.
"I'm quartz," it said.
That's Kaisoprace over there, and Brekia, and Jasper, and my wife Beryl. She's a bit metamorphic, but who isn't these days? Jasper, get off his foot.
Rincewind took the hand gingerly, bracing himself for the crunch of crushed bone. It didn't come. The troll's hand was rough and a bit lichenous around the fingernails.
"I'm sorry," said Rincewind. "I never really met trolls before." "We're a dying race," said Quart, sadly, as the party set off under the stars. "Young Jasper's the only pebble in our tribe. We suffer from philosophy, you know."
"Yes," said Rincewind, trying to keep up. The troll band moved very quickly, but also very quietly. Big, round shapes moving like wraiths through the night. Only the occasional flat squeak of a night creature who hadn't heard them approaching marked their passage.
"Oh, yes. Martyrs to it. It comes to all of us in the end. One evening, they say, you start to wake up, and then you think, why bother? And you just don't. See those boulders over there?"
Rincewind saw some huge shapes lying in the grass.
"The one on the end's my aunt. I don't know what she's thinking about, but she hasn't moved for 200 years.
"Gosh, I'm sorry."
"Oh, it's no problem with us around to look after them," said Quartz. "Not many humans around here, you see. I know it's not your fault, but you don't seem to be able to spot the difference between a thinking troll and an ordinary rock. My great-uncle was actually quarried, you know."
"Oh, that's terrible."
"Yes, one minute he was a troll, and the next he was an ornamental fireplace."
They paused in front of a familiar-looking cliff. The scuffed remains of a fire smouldered in the darkness.
"It looks like there's been a fight," said Beryl.
"They're all gone," said Rincewind. He ran to the end of the clearing. "The horses, too. Even the luggage."
"One of them's leaked," said Quartz, kneeling down. "The red watery stuff you have in your insides, look."
"Blood.
Is that what it's called? I've never really seen the point of it."
Rincewind scuttled about in the manner of one totally at his wit's end, peering behind bushes in case anyone was hiding there. That was why he tripped over a small green bottle.
"Cohen's liniment," he moaned. "He never goes anywhere without it." "Well," said Quartz, "you humans have something you can do. I mean, like when we slow right down and catch philosophy. Only you just fall to bits."
"Dying, it's cold," screamed Rincewind. "That's it. They haven't done that because they're not here."
"Unless they were eaten," suggested Jasper excitedly.
"Hmm," said Quartz, "and
wolves," said Rincewind.
"Yeah, we flattened all the wolves around here years ago," said the troll. "Old Grandad did anyway."
"He didn't like them?"
"No, he just didn't used to look where he was going. Hmm."
The trolls looked at the ground again.
"There's a trail," he said. "Quite a lot of horses."
He looked up at the nearby hills, where sheer cliffs and dangerous crags loomed over the moonlit forests.
"Old Grandad lives up there," he said quietly.
There was something about the way he said it that made Rincewind decide that he didn't ever want to meet Old Grandad.
"Dangerous, is he?" he ventured. "He's very old and big and mean. We haven't seen him about for years," said Quartz.
"Centuries," corrected Beryl. "He'll squash him all flat," added Jasper, jumping up and down on Rincewind's toes. "It just happens sometimes that a really old and big troll will go off by himself into the hills and the rock takes over, if you follow me."
"No,"
Quartz sighed.
"People sometimes act like animals, don't they? And sometimes a troll will start thinking like a rock. And rocks don't like people much."
Brekia, a skinny troll with a sandstone finish, rapped on Quartz's shoulder.
"Are we going to follow them, then?" he said. "The legend says we should help this Rincewind squashy."
Quartz stood up, thought for a moment, then picked Rincewind up by the scruff of his neck and, with a big, gritty movement, placed him on his shoulders.
"We go," he said firmly. "If we meet old Grandad, I'll try and explain."
Two miles away, a string of horses trotted through the night. Three of them carried captives, expertly gagged and bound. A fourth pulled a rough travois, on which the luggage lay trussed and netted and silent. Herena softly called the column to a halt, and beckoned one of her men to her.
"Are you quite sure?"
she said. I can't hear anything. I saw troll shapes, he said flatly. She looked around. The trees had thinned out here. There was a lot of scree, and ahead of them the track led towards a bald, rocky hill that looked especially unpleasant by red starlight. She was worried about the track. It was extremely old, but something had made it, and trolls took a lot of killing. She sighed. Suddenly, it looked as though that secretarial career was not such a bad option at that. Not for the first time, she reflected that there were many drawbacks to being a swordswoman, not least of which was that men didn't take you seriously until you'd actually killed them, by which time it didn't really matter anyway. Then there was all the leather, which brought her out in a rash but seemed to be unbreakably traditional. And then there was the ale. It was all right for the likes of Hrun the Barbarian or Simbar the Assassin to carouse all night in low bars, but Herrenna drew the line at it unless they sold proper drinks in small glasses, preferably with a cherry in. And as for the toilet facilities. But she was too big to be a thief, too honest to be an assassin, too intelligent to be a wife, and too proud to enter the only other female profession generally available. So she'd become a swordswoman, and had been a good one, amassing a modest fortune that she was carefully husbanding for a future that she hadn't quite worked out yet, but which would certainly include a B-day, if she had anything to say about it. There was a distant sound of splintering timber. Trolls had never seen the point of walking around trees. She looked up at the hill again. Two arms of high ground swept away to right and left, and up ahead was a large outcrop with, she squinted, some caves in it? Troll caves. But maybe a better option than blundering around at night, and come sun-up there'd be no problem. She leaned across to Gunsir, leader of the gang of Moorpork mercenaries. She wasn't very happy about him. It was true that he had the muscles of an ox, and the stamina of an ox. The trouble was that he seemed to have the brain of an ox as well, and the viciousness of a ferret. Like most of the lads in downtown Moorpork, he'd have cheerfully sold his granny for glue, and probably had. "We'll head for the caves and light a big fire in the entrance," she said. "Trolls don't like fire." He gave her a look which suggested he had his own ideas about who should be giving the orders. But his lips said,
"You're the boss?"
"Right." Herrenna looked back at the three captives. That was the box, all right. Trumon's description had been absolutely accurate. But neither of the men looked like a wizard, not even a failed wizard.
"Oh, dear," said Quartz.
The trolls halted. The night closed in like velvet. An owl hooted eerily. At least Rincewind assumed it was an owl. He was a little hazy on ornithology. Perhaps a nightingale hooted, unless it was a thrush. A bat flittered overhead. He was quite confident about that. He was also very tired and quite bruised. "Why, oh dear," he said. He peered into the gloom. There was a distant speck in the hills that might have been a fire. "Oh," he said, "you don't like fires, do you?" Quartz nodded.
"It destroys the superconductivity of our brains," he said. "But a fire that small wouldn't have much effect on old Grandad."
Rincewind looked around cautiously, listening for the sound of a rogue troll. He'd seen what normal trolls could do to a forest. They weren't naturally destructive, they just treated organic matter as a sort of inconvenient fog.
"Let's hope he doesn't find it then," he said fervently.
Quartz sighed.
"Not much chance of that," he said. "They've lit it in his mouth.